Well, howdy! Yeah, so we're going to have a go at this, or at least take a fighting try at it. It's been a frustrating couple of past two nights. We closed out what I thought was a pretty Jim Dandy show for being on the road this past Wednesday, or Tuesday. And I was all fired up and loaded for bear on Wednesday, and technical difficulties, which persisted into yesterday. So that, frustrated as all get out, I have tinkered and fooled around technically all day long until I came up with what I hope has been a workaround, although I just honestly don't know. And still trying to figure out whether it is or it isn't. But that's how these things go. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. I'm Bob Kincaid. And, oh God, there's never a dull moment. And I don't seem to know how to stop this. Wait a minute. Yeah, goodbye intro. Okay, I just love it, but still. It's an open question as to whether any of that actually got through. This, like I said, though, this is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. It is Friday. It is the 30th day of November, 2012. November comes to its end, and we enter, beginning tomorrow, into the last day, or the last month, rather, the last month of poor, tired, beaten, bedraggled, old, 2012. We did, thanks to your help. Okay, so the intro music didn't come through. Oh, I'll be damned. How do you like that? Why am I not surprised? Thanks to your help, we did meet the old goal of $2,500. And thanks to challenges both from Gary and from Paul in Portland, we finished, or we will finish, the month of November having met our fundraising goal of $2,500. And for that, I am, and as are all of us who work on this all-volunteer project, entirely grateful. Okay, so, alright, thank you everybody who's let me know that this stuff is coming through. I guess that means, based on the fact that the intro didn't run, even though I could hear it, but I can't hear myself. Check. No, that isn't it. Oh well, this is just razor's edge broadcasting anyway. I guess that means this is just going to be one long filibobster for as long as I can make the filibobster bob. But that's okay, because it's not like we are lacking in stuff to talk about. Of course, you know, there are a wide variety of methods by which you can listen to The Horn. I try always to mention things like TuneIn Radio, Stitcher Internet Radio, Tuner Internet Radio app for iPhone or Android, Dar.fm, Streama.com, Roku. The podcast address, if you're listening live and want to check out the recorded version, the podcast address is in the subdomain for this program at whiterosesociety.org. You can also get it over at iTunes. Anyway, like I said, I was loaded for bear Wednesday, and I was still pretty much ready yesterday, and I have no earthly honest idea what has gone sideways, except for the fact that a firmware update came through, and nothing has been right with this mixed desk since then. The things, well, that, you know, even it, when you dance on the razor's edge of technology out there in the, you know, out there in the future, like we broadcast, every now and then, whether you like it or not, you're going to get cut. And cut we were. But we're going to get one last part, we're going to get one last show in before November closes. And if anyone wants to help us reach the $3,000 level that was suggested by our buddy Tom out in California, that would be most welcome. Every little bit does help as we begin the new month. And speaking of Tom, I wanted to run something past you, something that Tom had written a week or so ago. Because Tom is part of our Northern California contingent of Horn family members. I had mentioned the fact that Netroots Nation is scheduled for San Jose, California next summer. I don't know how we would pull it off, but Tom is already, Tom's an idea guy. And he's suggesting that if I can get out that way, that we really need to pull together a Northern California or Western States horn in. I like that, a horn in. He said, he wants to have a horn Western conference. He said, let's see, Andy's around, Michael, there's Richard and Dave, Sandra. There's Marty. There's lots of people that might be able to, if we could figure out some way to pull this off. So your thoughts are welcome on that, and thank you, Tom, for suggesting it. Tom is a longtime pillar of support for this program, and we thank him very much. I don't mean to sound like a prima donna, but I would like it a lot if I could hear my own voice in my cans, which I can't. Anything? Oh, hey, that's me. Wait a minute. There I am. Hey, yay, that helps a lot.
See, I just needed to walk over to
you, right,
Bob.
You're just magic that way, Agnes. This is our last night in Washington, D.C. for a while. And the reason for that is we got to go home because on Tuesday I got to get on a plane. This is the part where you holler, "Your taxi's ready, Jack."
Fly away, Bob. Fly away.
No, that's not the line, dear.
Your taxi's ready, Jack.
Thank you. No, I fly away on Tuesday. I'm going up to northern Wisconsin. We're going to be talking about mountaintop removal up there, and hopefully we'll get folks excited and encouraged and determined to stop the sort of modified mountaintop removal that some industrial thugs want to bring their way. And let's see, so that'll be flying on Tuesday and then speaking engagements Wednesday, Thursday, Friday in northern Wisconsin, and then flying home Saturday. So not much in the way of a chance for shows those 4 days. So that's why I was so frustrated by the absence of shows last night and the night before.
Really?
I guess you get it. Well, I know you do. I'll be half crazy by the time I get home trying to get back to the microphone. We'll have a show Monday night. But then, yeah. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Yes, dear.
Wouldn't you be surprised?
Talk into the microphone, dear.
See, fine. There you go. But your big head was blocking it. See, we just need to do pirate radio. We'll swipe it from Bob.
Yar. No, you won't. Anyway, so that's what the schedule is coming up. I'm really looking forward to this Wisconsin trip because, I love every chance I get up there. That's just a fact. But I will hate being away from the microphone. I'm going to be doing, Monday, I'm doing a radio interview out that way, so I'm looking forward to that as well Monday morning. Just trying to get people fired up to stand up for themselves and stand up for their communities before these poisoners try to come in and ruin everything that is good about that land and that area. So that's the schedule. And I mentioned trying to reach the $3,000 fundraising goal. The PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com, as is the snail mail address under the tab Contribute. Mainly because I know what will happen to fundraising while I'm away next week. It will largely disappear, which will put us in a hole for December. Hey, honey, Ray liked what you said there a minute ago. Your big head is in the way, dear.
Thank you, Ray.
He says, nice to hear your better half. Oh, she is. She is. But anyway, so that's where we find ourselves this Friday on the front porch that is going to be a filibobster after all, because, well, we've just got... I don't know, at some point in time I'm going to, hopefully John and I can sit down and sort out what happened, because I've been over everything, everything. I've been reading and swearing, and bricks have not been involved, neither has anything been thrown, but that's roughly where we are. Extreme frustration. But there is no dearth of stuff about which we may talk in the coming couple and a half hours. I guess we'll have to rely on email for your comments. Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid, at gmail.com. And we'll get the dialogue going that way. In fact, I've got a couple of them set up already. Here, I'd better quit out of Skype before. Let's see that. Yeah, there we go. Because there's no sense even trying it. If we couldn't hear the intro, we're not going to hear the callers. I wanted to start off with a couple of emails because Ron in Raleigh started something a few nights back. With his letter about his email about atheism and whether atheism is or is not a religion, and I shared some thoughts about that via email and some thoughts of my own, and the issue seems to have gained steam, and I've got two really really good emails for you, both coming from. The other side of the planet. On one hand, we've got it coming from the UK, and in the other, coming from our good friend Horst, who is in Taiwan. We'll go in the order in which they were received. We'll start with Horst, who said, my two bits on the atheism religion debate. And yeah, there's other news happening out in the world today, but there's just no, and we'll discuss it as you wish. But I think this comes first because it seems to have engaged people. Horst says, I've long struggled with the basic act of simply defining atheism. To me, it comes down to a fundamental question. Do atheists assert categorically that there are no gods? Or do we simply take the etymology of the word at face value and say that atheists merely profess no belief in any particular god? There's a huge difference, and it seems that many self-avowed atheists may not even be aware of this distinction. I've seen attempts by such luminaries as the Thinking Atheist, which apparently isn't just one person, break down the supposed difference between atheism and agnosticism, but even they end up essentially, if unwittingly, conflating the two terms. To me, if you are unwilling to commit yourself to a positive belief that there are no gods, then you are admitting to the logical possibility that such a being might exist somewhere in the universe despite the lack of evidence available to human observation thus far. Essentially, you are admitting that although you know of no gods, you cannot state with conviction that they absolutely do not exist. This is to admit that you don't know the answer to the question, which means that when you get right down to it, you're an agnostic. Agnostic being Greek for without knowledge. It is not logically consistent to say you know there are no gods because there is no evidence for them. That's like religious types saying they know there is a God because they're convinced they've had direct contact or some sort of internal event such as an intense spiritual experience or whatnot, footprints in the sand, whatever it is the young people are going on about these days. Whippersnappers, get off my lawn. It is a logical impossibility. That was me, not Horst. It is a logical impossibility to prove a negative, so the best an intellectually consistent and logical observer can say is that there is no reason to believe in a god or gods, and there's nothing religious or irreligious about saying so, as far as that goes. On the other hand, anybody who asserts as fact anything that cannot be proved is operating in the realm of belief. Yes, and we know where that puts us. This sort of atheism is in fact a belief system which, if it isn't a religion as such, it is at least a kissing cousin. And I'm not sure how far I go with that. No poison is not a different kind of poison, like I was saying the other night. And I realize that's a little bit unfair because I'm sort of, equating religion with poison. But then again, see the history books. Short version says, Horst, it's the difference between non-belief and disbelief. If you actively disbelieve in something, then you believe in its non-existence, and thus subscribe to a system of belief. Failure to believe in something, though, simply means that you see no reason to believe in it, and while you may feel fairly certain that such creature does not actually exist, you're not going to go so far as to say you know for a fact that it doesn't. What kind of atheist are you? For the record, I haven't heard Hartman's argument concerning any of this, so I'm not commenting on that. I haven't listened to him since they found out KTLK was giving his podcast away for free. Your pal, signed, Horst. Now, from the other side of the planet, from Glenn in the UK. Hello, Bob. Best to you and all the Horn family. Writing in, because the line is apparently down, but I wanted to follow up with on Ron's note from Monday. We'll be back to regular phone lines Monday. Hartman has always considered himself cute with his atheist baiting, says Glenn, despite talking to Hitchens, who dismissed his smirking reference to the religion of atheism as being an utterly idiotic concept. Hartman's been slowly tying himself in knots for years with this, and it is very sad to hear someone compromise their intellectual honesty when you like and admire them. I heard a mental ding a dozen times or more during the program as he baited atheists, including one he'd invited on the show to discuss Christmas First Amendment issues, although the guests didn't rise to the bait. If one is evangelizing on a topic, according to Hartman, then it has become one's religion. By this definition, being enthusiastic to proclaim there are no gods makes one a religious person. A new condition was introduced by Hartman on Monday. A humble, quiet atheist does not need a label of religion attached. So we pass the Hartman test by shutting up and sitting down whenever the subject of religion is mentioned or assumed of us. Any philosophy, in Hartman world, is now a religion and should have all the baggage, but none of the respect, suddenly associated with it. But I don't want to shut up and sit down, says Glenn, and have it assumed that I'm a good little Christian just because I'm white and in the Northern Hemisphere. No more than I want to shut up about environmental matters, social injustice, bigotry, or the evils we perpetrate on the animals with which we share the world. How can one have more than one religion? Is there an example anywhere of someone simultaneously being a Christian and a Muslim both? A Buddhist and a Hindu, a Mormon and a Scientologist? Of course not. But the Hartman definition demands your religion is anything one feels passionate about and talks about, making them an evangelist. That would make me, and you, I suspect, an evangelist on any number of points. making a religious devotee of us on multiple subjects. Go up to any Christian, Jew, Muslim, Mormon, and ask them what else they worship, what other religions they have, and they would recognize the insult at once. But have no religion, and it's just fine to attribute the same to them, and a right-on guy like Hartman feels like he has a pass on it. It's absolute crap, and he surely knows it, which is why it's such a shame. What a shame he lacks such courage when it comes to the ongoing atrocities of the Israelis. Always has, and is completely gutless on the subject, despite repeatedly bragging that nobody controls his message, how unafraid and unsold out he is. How brave the Hartmans and Chris Hedges of the world are in dumping opprobrium on people they know never do harm in the name of that philosophy. I don't like picking on the failings of one of the good guys, but his continual poking and intellectual dishonesty on this one really ticks me off. Take care, Bob, and another big hello to the Horn family. Do stay warm this winter. Signed, Glenn. And I find this whole discussion captivating. It is exciting, really, because it's hard to walk away from being accused of being a member of a religion when you absolutely want nothing whatsoever to do with any religion. And yet someone has decided to pigeonhole you into one, even though you're not one. I still like my analogy best. The absence of poison is not a different kind of poison. The absence of cattle is not a different kind of cow. On and on and on in any terms you might pick a term. And my family and my friends and my neighbors are being poisoned? So therefore the fact that I spend a lot of time talking about trying to end the poisoning of Appalachia, that makes, what, environmentalism my religion? Well, it's not. Because I got to the point where I'm sick and tired of being pigeonholed as a damned environmentalist. The only thing I'm happy with is human rights activist. Appalachian futurist. And I guess it is within the way and the nature of humans that we have to provide those sort of taxonomies for each other. Oh, you must be an environmentalist. You know, I was in a meeting yesterday over in one of the House office buildings. And I had to explain to a congressional staffer that, because the staffer has said, you know, you're not like the usual environmentalist we hear from. And I said, well, mainly that's because I'm not one. I mean, sure. And I don't want to put anybody off. This is not to say that, being a so-called environmentalist is not good or is not admirable. But that makes it sound like I care more about the environment than the people who live in it. I'm a humanist. I'm a secular humanist. I'm a hillbilly humanist. I care about the ability of both my region and this planet, excuse me, to go on supporting human life. I think to call someone who is concerned that way an environmentalist really shortchanges the commitment and really misses the point. If I see a beautiful mountain lake surrounded by gorgeous trees. And majestic mountains. I guess I'm of that philosophical school that says that those mountains are only majestic because some cognition has been there to perceive it so. It's a little bit of Schrodinger's cat, isn't it? Heisenberg's uncertainty principle, which I realized is physics, but it wanders over into philosophy somewhere along the way too. Ray says, I rely on the AA concept of God as you understand him. Not perfect, since it does assume a God, but I'm at peace with it. And I guess that's why it's very difficult for atheists to participate in that kind of an organization. Or so I've been told. But I do find it a fascinating topic, and I do not understand why people persist in saying that not having a religion is a religion. That just, from the standpoint of someone who for whom language means a very great deal, makes my little head hurt. Ah, I see, you're not Catholic. That makes you a not a Catholic. Oh, wait, you're not Jewish? Ah, you're a not a Jew. What? You're not Muslim? That makes you one of those not a Muslims. Not a Buddhist? That makes you not a Buddhist. So in the way that it's being framed, everybody who isn't every other religion in the world is as much a member of the not a religion as they are of whatever they are. And to be of no religion whatsoever is to be a non-member, a not a religionist. Member of, oh God. I don't know. I think I'm going to go snort hairspray or something. Jack writing in from Shreveport. I don't know the answer to this, but maybe we could get your thoughts. In the context of the email about having a positive assertion that there is no God or gods, are we making assumptions about what God is? I think that's inherent. Or actually making certain assertions about what God ain't. Typically, says Jack, this would be something that has a human-like form and behaviors and would have thought patterns and a consciousness like we do. Would definitions far off from this alter the meaning of atheism? Maybe, maybe not. I mean, perhaps, you know, if there's a deity, I can't even start with. Who would dare to define the Almighty or that? I'm just lost on that. But for instance, if we were to say that the universe itself has some sort of consciousness, are we therefore assigning it deistic status? You know, does one of your white blood cells have enough consciousness to contemplate the entirety of you, even though the DNA is within it to explain the entirety of you? Of course not. But I feel fairly comfortable myself, and I don't want to impose upon anyone else, I feel fairly comfortable in my own skin saying that I am certain. I mean 100% rock solid certain that the vengeful, hateful, sadistic, tormenting, mean, rotten, disgusting, perverted freak that is described in the Abrahamic religions isn't real. No matter what you call him or it. It is a fantasy. It's a fairy tale. It's not, there is no giant juvenile delinquent in the sky who runs around smiting people. Now, I get into more trouble when I start looking at the... Why, dear, why are you staring at me like a...
Why not just take...
If you, honey, you have to talk into the...
I am, Bob.
No, you're not. Now you are.
Why not just take the Heinlein approach?
What? Thou art God?
Thou art God and treat one
another. Well, that's that holistic approach I was just addressing. But I get into more trouble with stuff like that and animistic traditions that recognize a divine spark in all things. I get in trouble with that because I can almost begin to buy into it. Because suddenly, you know, if you contemplate the vastness of the universe, the idea that any one of us would have the consciousness to contemplate the whole, you know, that kind of reduces us to one dying cell of an armpit hair on the universe. And I'm pretty sure, hey, you guys, no, they're absolutely clueless. I just checked in with it in my armpit hairs. They have no idea what else is going on here. They're busy being armpit hairs. So that's where I get into trouble because I don't even know what consciousness is. I'm lucky to know what day of the week it is. Who are we kidding? But that is a topic that has commanded a good deal of discussion over the last several days, and because there was a good deal of thought put into both the remarks sent by Horst and by Glenn, I wanted to put that out there for your consideration. And you know, you can jump into this discussion as well via email. Maybe we'll get some phone calls in on Monday. That'd be nice, wouldn't it? Be nice to have phone calls tonight if the godforsaken devil box hadn't decided to go sideways. What did I see on my Facebook page? Saying devil box reminded me because I think we've got a new name for the computer. It's just precious. I was wandering along my little Facebook page the other day. Bob Kincaid, by the way, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, just Bob Kincaid on Facebook. There it is. Jeremy from Vermont posted this photograph. I think he addressed it to Mike Malloy and me. It is a woman with a sort of vacant, mouse-like look on her, in her eyes, and she's holding a sign. She's got her little yellow gloves on. It's from a demotivational poster that says, "That sign does not look handwritten." She's holding a sign that has obviously been printed with the aid of a computer that says, "Destroy the computer. A homosexual invention by Alan Turing. Who cares if..." Okay, now we're using an inquisitive word, an inquisitive pronoun here. I will tell you now that the sentence does not end with a question mark, but with a period. "A homosexual invention by Alan Turing. Who cares if he cracked the German Enigma code and won World War II, period. It's a homo's devil machine." Yes. And so, I don't know, we might be taking Skype calls tonight were it not for the homo devil machine, or its demonic accomplice, the homo devil mixer. God. See, even the word even finds its way into our discussions unwittingly. I suppose this nation has never been comprised of a whole lot of geniuses. I'm not one. But really, the homo devil machine? Of course, it's said that the father of the blues, W.C. Handy, became a trumpet player because he brought a guitar into the house one time back down in Florence, Alabama, and his daddy broke it into a million pieces. His daddy was a preacher and said he wouldn't have no devil music box in his house. Apparently the trumpet was not demonic, nor apparently the piano. And young William Christopher Handy would go on to invent the blues. Homo Devil Machine. Couldn't have made that one up on a dare. Now, there is a ton of stuff out there, and I really appreciate the emails. Randy writing in from Pennsylvania noting, it might be Thou Art God, but a linear might not be Thou Art God, but a linear recombination of We Art God. Thou Art God seems sort of egotistical. We Art God somewhat less so. And then there's Tim from L.A. sending along a link. Tim says, there's no God, Bob, and the ones who do believe are mentally ill. Read the story's comments below. Dateline Whitefish, which apparently is in Montana because it's from the Missoulian.com, a lawsuit calling for the removal of a statue of Jesus from a patch of federal land at Whitefish Mountain Resort will move forward to trial after a national organization of atheists and agnostics identified a local member and avid skier who regularly encounters the statue on Big Mountain and finds it offensive. The group, the Freedom From Religion Foundation, yay, good people, filed the legal action to get rid of the statue in U.S. District Court in Missoula in February, charging that the religious symbol, a historic icon on Big Mountain, violates the, notice the subtle journalistic slant there, a historic icon. It certainly can't be said to be a true-to-life icon, because nobody knows what Yeshua looked like, of course. A historic icon on Big Mountain violates the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. The suit names as defendants the U.S. Forest Service and Flathead National Forest Supervisor Chip Weber, who in January issued a decision to reauthorize a special use permit allowing the statue to remain. Members of a local chapter of the Knights of Columbus who maintain the statue and lease the site also are named. Also, it's not just a non-sectarian Jeebus. It's a really, really good Roman Jeebus. Now, here's the fun part, as Tim pointed out in his email. You have to read the comments. And on a story like this, you just know the comments are going to be a lulu. And I love it's skiing atheist, flying nun, skiing atheist. See, they're just the same. Okay, so there's some sane people. Well, Tim's been at work there. Lots of non-believers chiming in on this one. Oh, here's, okay, you knew there'd be an idiot sooner or later. Sorry, Mr. Cox, you are so offended each time you pass the statue. Poor baby, way things are going in the world, maybe you won't have to worry much longer. Then I wonder how high on your offense list the statue really was. The atheist group is a global contradiction. If they do not believe in Jesus, then why do they recognize Jesus as a statue when they see the actual statue? Well, there's some irrefutable logic. They must recognize this is Jesus, therefore they do believe the existence of Jesus when viewed. Their position is a contradiction in beliefs. And every time you get one of these simpletons out there, so proud of himself for getting that all the way, you know, one damned letter, one finger, one button at a time, somebody has to come along and ruin it. So when you see a statue of Godzilla, the fact that you recognize it as Godzilla means that Godzilla is real? Don't look at the statue. This is Rhonda. Don't look at the statue. Get real and grow up. It wasn't put up for you, so why worry about it? Not everything on this earth was put here just for you. I don't believe either, but that doesn't mean I can't look the other way. You know what? If you're hauling, if you're flying down the slopes on a pair of barrel staves, you pretty much, there are some things in this world you pretty much gotta look at, or you're gonna wind up, well, it doesn't end well. Oh, mercy. And then this from Dr. John. Subject line, this is why I'm a materialist. This discussion of atheism as a religion or not seems very reductive to me. Nothing at all against the people who have commented so far, but it's the sort of discussion that on the surface is a worthy one, but it degenerates into a question of definitions. Honestly, I don't care what someone believes or thinks. I'm much more interested in what the person does. To me, behavior that's inspired by a religious motivation isn't by definition good or bad. It should be judged by its effects. I support feeding the hungry regardless of motivation. I oppose oppressing people based on their sex regardless of motivation. Give me a social justice Catholic to hang out with over a jackass 1% or agnostic any day of the week. We'll have fun and probably do some good in the bargain. Hear, hear. That really does reduce it to something workable, doesn't it? If a religious person is feeding a hungry person, good for them. If a non-theist is feeding a hungry person, the same degree of good attaches to it. And it's not good within some sort of cosmic scheme. Well, no. It's good because it's good to feed hungry people. I care not whether a Baptist, a Methodist, a Presbyterian, a Buddhist, a Jainist, a Hindu, or whomever build a shelter for the homeless, as long as there is a shelter for the homeless. I remember many, many years ago when I was a boy, some tornadoes ripped through Alabama. And, I mean, did the same kind of damage they did a couple of years ago, flattened areas, just made towns disappear. And up north of us, across the line in Tennessee, there was a group of Mennonites, similar to the Amish, you know, no zippers, you know, just loops and pegs and very, very limited in technology. But they were jumping in the backs of pickup trucks to take a ride down to start clearing the debris and help save some lives from of people that were trapped. And someone asked them, but y'all riding buggies, what are you doing getting in these trucks? And they said, brother, people are hurting. This is no time to stand on doctrine. And I had to respect that. I like Dr. John's phrase, a jackass 1% or agnostic. See, I don't know that those 1%ers are agnostic. I've got a pretty good idea of what those 1%ers worship. They're little flat paper idols that have pictures on them of the money. That's the religion. it's fairly obvious that we do have a national religion, one First Amendment or no First Amendment. And anyone watching the so-called budget crisis, the fiscal crisis, knows what the religion is. It isn't Christianity, it is not Judaism, it is not Islam, it is not Shinto, it is not Buddhism, it is not Hindu, it is not Jainism, animism, it is not the religion of the Norse nor of the Greeks. It is the religion of Ayn Rand. It is the religion of Milton Friedman. And that religion is avarice. More vicious by far than anything named in their more esoteric manifestations. Ferg had a little interesting to use these terms. Ferg had a little epiphany the other night. He had gone outside to just take a walk around the building. It gets a little tiresome being cooped up down here in this little basement apartment after a while. You can only watch so much television before your mind begins to melt. And walking along outside, he met one of Washington, D.C.'s legion of homeless people. I'll turn it over for him to tell the story.
Well, I was outside the other night, and like Dad said, I was just taking a walk, just trying to enjoy a little bit of the nightlife, because I can't stay cooped up very long. I get cabin fever really easy. And while I was outside, a homeless woman pushing a buggy was walking near me, and she didn't have much on, and it was pretty cold outside. Yeah, I had to have a trench coat made of wool on in order to stay warm, and all she had was a little knitted up overcoat looking thing. And she stopped and asked me if I had any money, and all I had was a quarter in my pocket, and I gave her the quarter and said, "I'm sorry, but this is all I have," and she'd stop me and she had stopped me, and she said, "Out of everybody here, you're the kindest person I've met. You're the only one to give me any money from here, and I come by here often." And I felt bad for her, and I asked her where she was heading to, and she said, "Oh, I'm just strolling around until I find a warm spot to sleep." And she started on her way, and she turned the corner, and I didn't see her again. But, you know, just to think that we can spend millions of dollars on warheads and missiles and sending troops out to blow brown people away into a red mist, but we can't afford to, you know, give the homeless people a place to sleep or even a decent meal to eat. And we call ourselves the Christian nation. So, yeah.
It had an impact on him. Such things do. Especially in a town like this. And you begin to ask questions why we do. Because there is not a social problem. You know, Republicans like to say, conservatives like, "Well, you know, those damned liberals, they think you can just solve a problem by throwing money at it." When their response to it is to not throw any money at it. Once again, not throwing money at a problem is not a solution. Agreed? We don't have to have people trying to sleep out of the wind and out of the freezing temperatures, or on the other side of the our annual trip around the sun, trying to sleep out of the sun and out of the blazing heat. We can do better. But most of this country doesn't want to. Most of this country is happy to spend the vast majority of its wealth on things that go boom. And as Ferg noted, blow brown people into a red mist. Because it makes us feel good about ourselves. In some sort of twisted, maniacal kind of way. Ray asking, when is Ferg going to play guitar again? Yeah, that'll probably be when we get home. He doesn't have his axe with him. There wasn't any room in the car for it.
Do not call it an axe.
Well, I do, so hush. It'll probably be after I come back from the Wisconsin trip. Almost certain of it. It's hard to look around. I mean, Agnes and I took a walk Wednesday, as a matter of fact. We were downtown and decided instead of jumping on the metro that we would walk the couple of miles up Pennsylvania Avenue to where we stay when we're here. And later on, I showed her photographs from 1865 of that same Pennsylvania Avenue, roughly the same area where we were when it was a dirt road and nothing but storefronts. And we have become a vastly wealthy nation. And yet here in 2012, toward the end of 2012, this latest iteration of our trip around the sun, we are actually being compelled to have a phony baloney, fake, dummied up, rubed up, frauded up, ginned up discussion about whether you and I and the rest of us who constitute the working class should have to work until we die, or whether we might be able to get a break somewhere after age 67. You know, it used to be 65. Ronald Reagan ran it up to 67 back at a time when people like Barack Obama and I were otherwise, you know, I said, you know, our generation, we're roughly the same age. But we were looking the other way. It was the 80s. We were in the prime of, you know, hell, I turned 20 in 1983. Our retirements were not at the forefront of our imaginings. And so, cynical as these politicians are, Republican and Democrat, looked around and said, hey, we can fix and save Social Security, but somebody's got to get screwed. The old people always vote, and they will eliminate us where we stand if we touch theirs. So, hey, those kids that aren't, they're just entering their 20s, let's F them. Yeah, what was that, 23, 24, maybe 25? And they screwed us. And you know what? I don't remember, and I was kind of plugged in. I was tuned into what was going on. I don't remember any million 20-something tail end of the baby boomer marches saying, hell no. No, I think most of us were trying to get home on Thursday nights in time to see what that delightful Keaton family was up to this week. But now we're having another phony baloney, ginned up, faked up, frauded up, rubed up conversation about whether or not 67 was good enough. Maybe it should be 70. How about 75? Do I hear 80? And it is as big a fraud as it was then. Because they didn't consider the actual remedy then, and they're not going to consider it anytime soon. I saw a comment at a blog earlier today that I thought was extremely profound. One of my favorite must-reads every day is Charles Pierce over at the Esquire blog. He's just, quite frankly, the most consistently good, correct, progressive blogger out there. And he put a post up today called, "We're Nowhere Near a Climate Change Solution." And he started, and he writes about, and he uses great big bold letters, he writes about the melting of the permafrost and what that means. He writes about the melting of ice in both the northern and the southern hemispheres. He says there are two elements of this ongoing global catastrophe that are particularly maddening, and one of them is not the fact that the Republican leadership in the House just named a climate change denialist, Lamar Smith of Texas, the chair of the House Committee on Science, Space, and Technology. The first is that the fight over how best to confront a global crisis on a global basis seems altogether intractable. That's the first. The other frustrating thing is that the apparent inability of the world in general to tumble to the fact that climate change is a creature of interconnected phenomena. The report about the permafrost is a perfect example. The melting of the permafrost is not merely a hardship for the people who live atop it. It is not merely destined to change the topography of the Arctic to such an extent that some places simply disappear into the sea. It also contributes to the overall problem, making the greenhouse gases worse, thereby heating up the planet some more, thereby causing more permafrost to melt, thereby unleashing more methane and CO2, and around we go. It's a mess that we'll not soon get out of, because we lack the will to get out of it. I'm sick to death of seeing people say, "Well, what about China and India?" And yet these are the same people who are through a church door every time the damn thing opens, and they're missing that whole Pluck the mote out of your own eye before you reach for the beam that is in thy brother's, or whatever verse. And there's a comment to the blog that I thought was brilliant, because I like things that put neat little bows on issues. A person by the name of Dave Wing, who is apparently brilliant, wrote, "Nothing exposes the hypocrisy of the fix the debt crowd more than climate change. The fix the debt shills maintain that the tough measures must be taken now so that our children and grandchildren will not be burdened with crushing debt in the future, but will have at least something of a social safety net. This argument is, of course, a big bunch of malarkey offered up as a basis to turn us into the equivalent of a third world country full of debt and wage slaves and to steal the money that is in Social Security. But here's the fun part. This is where Dave Wing goes from just good writing commenter to freaking brilliant. But it also illustrates that the same bunch of charlatans have nothing to offer with regard to a real crisis of our children and grandchildren living in a world racked by drought, oppressive heat, and cataclysmic storms. And I had never considered it in that light before, and it hit me like a ton of bricks. Because, you know, I remember back when the Iraq War was just a little bitty baby war crime. Before it was in full flower. And some of us of the liberal progressive persuasion were saying things about, like, you know, George Bush is putting this on a credit card and he's running the debt up and he's running the deficit up And what about our grandchildren and the fact that, you know, George Bush's war meant about $40,000 apiece to generations unborn, blah, 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 blah. And the response to that from the Republican Party was for Dick Cheney to bite the head off a bat and then snarl into a microphone, deficits don't matter. And all the little repig lickens hopped up and down in their little Renfield cockroach-eating way and declared that he was, yes, master, yes, I'm waiting for you. And now those same Renfields are running around talking, what about our grandchildren? When in fact there is a real live looming crisis that, you know, it doesn't affect the ability of our grandchildren to buy things. It affects the ability of our grandchildren to go on being grandchildren. To go on being humans. And thus we loop back to what I was saying earlier about human existence on the planet, which I guess kind of makes me, in Dr. John's terminology, a bit of a human materialist. I mean, if I... That possible Goldilocks planet that they found that's only 42 or 49 light years away from home, that was announced a few weeks ago. If we had the ability to fly out to it, who wouldn't love to go and see it? And that's the whole point, to go and see it. We're fascinated with it because we are little, easily fascinated primates who want to perceive things as big or small, beautiful or ugly, cool or warm, cold or hot, wet or dry. And we do that because that's the kind of primate things we humans do. Our technologies, from fire forward, are determined and built around how we perceive our world. And yet, the very serious people are concerned about the debt, which Benedict and Benny in our chat room pointed out just moments ago. There is no federal debt that has to be paid back. Federal debt is nothing more than unredeemed tax credits. They are paid back whenever anyone pays federal tax. And I know this is the kind of thing that drives Benny just practically babbling crazy. Because the entire discussion about the economy is predicated on frauds, fictions, and bunko. And it is. We don't have to have a discussion about America's, about the United States' fiscal health. We don't have to have that discussion in terms of how we will screw working people. We can have that discussion in terms of the misplaced priorities that we manifest practically every time the federal treasury is opened, in the amount of money we spend on those cruise missiles that Ferg was talking about that'll turn brown people into red mist. We could have national discussions about why we don't spend more, making sure that old women don't freeze to death in the dark, getting their first quarter from somebody inside a building run by a major religion. Because that's what she said to Ferg. You're the first person in this building that's ever given me anything. Right? Yeah. So just some, you know, some gristle to chew on, I suppose. Ray points out, he says, I'll never forget when Cheney was asked about the vast majority of Americans not approving of the Iraq war. His response was, yeah, so? Meanwhile, all the little Renfields said, oh, you tell them, master. Oh, is that a beetle? Robert in Australia points out, speaking of Jesus, a little fun. In a recent episode of the British sci-fi comedy Red Dwarf, the crew are accidentally sent back to the year 23 AD after assembling a Swedish flat-pack shower kit the wrong way. That's got to be funny. They land in England and have to walk to India to obtain some lemons to make a battery to power the return remote. While in India, they meet Jesus, who returns with them to the future to have a kidney stone removed. While recovering, Jesus reads a history book and is horrified at the deaths his teachings cause in the future. He secretly returns to 23 AD, determined that Christianity won't happen. The crew follow in attempt to change his mind back, as all those terrible things done in his name weren't his fault. Of course, as it happens, the crew helped Jesus of Caesarea and not the other guy, Jesus being a rather common name at the time. Before going home again, the crew stop in India for a curry and get a table at a restaurant next to another Jesus. And his twin brother, Judas. I love to think about stuff like that. If we ever find life on another planet, will the major religion industry start putting money into rocket ships so that they can go and tell whatever 9-tentacled, 16-legged creature, and Jesus died for you too, my thing, son? Creature, and we'll pray for you. So I would love to fire up a tune or something and go into the second hour and solicit calls and whatnot like that, but I can't do that. But I do need to take a break, because I've been at this for about an hour and 10 minutes now, and breaks are rather necessary things, even if they aren't commercial and even if they aren't paying the bills. Speaking of paying the bills, any help you would care to send along, the PayPal button is there at headonradionetwork.com, as is the snail mail address. So, I'll be gone for, there's nothing I can really do, but I'll be gone for about, 5 minutes or so, and then we'll come back. This is conversation radio, and I'm sorry because there's not much of a conversation tonight. It's mostly just, well, it's all just one big filibuster. But this is the horn, and we'll have some conversation come Monday when I get home to the studio that works. Be back in a few. Time me. This is the horn. No, you really didn't lose signal. Bill, I can't play any music during the breaks. That's just the way this last little attempt at doing a show before we blow one out of D.C. is just going to happen. Can't play music, can't take calls. This is nothing but a filibuster for however long it goes on. Thanks, Ed, for kicking in to get December started. It's much appreciated indeed. So anyway, enough of that portion of the filibuster. I wanted to share a website with you and just a little story. Anytime you walk by the Supreme Court here in D.C., there's almost always somebody out front of it protesting some way or another. 9 times out of 10, it's somebody that wants to protect the fetuses. Or it's somebody who wants the Supreme Court to order the aliens to stop transmitting through the fillings in his teeth. Or it's the Supreme Court, even with its stunning printed on plastic, God knows how much it cost, drop cloth. Well, it's a magnet for aggrieved people. So imagine my surprise when walking past there this afternoon, I walked up to see what someone was upset about, expecting to see that they were indeed expecting to see again, you know, somebody who wants the Supreme Court to investigate the disappearance of their cousin Cephas on the night that the lights were sparkling over. Well, never mind. Instead, I found someone who was very, very serious about a very real issue. Remember a couple of months ago, when we talked about the young girl who was getting mouthy in school down in Texas and was beaten by the male assistant principal to the point that blisters arose on her backside? And how it turned out that there was a law that said men, full-grown men, were not allowed to beat girl students, and full-grown women were not allowed to beat male students, and that the remedy to the breach of that law, according to the independent school district in question, was to change the law so that men could, in fact, beat young women. Yeah, I remember that story, too. Charming, wasn't it? Well, lo and behold, the people out front of the Supreme Court today were actually trying to bring attention to a bill that's in the Congress. It's been there since 2011. It is called the Ending Corporal Punishment in Schools Act. It is H.R. 3027. Which seems pretty laudable. The website is TheHitting, T-H-E-H-I-T-T-I-N-G, TheHittingStopsHere.com. It is apparently a bill that would end the ability of full-grown adults to beat children in school, and would do so on a national level. The folks I was talking to were eager to talk to anyone who would listen because, well, as usual, they can't get the incredibly distracted attention of the for-profit media, and yet, as the woman who was there pointed out to me, in 19 states, beating children, beating education into a child is still quite legal in 19 states. And it is done at a rate such that it's like every 11 seconds a child in America somewhere has some education beaten into him or her or them. H.R. 3027, Ending Corporal Punishment in Schools Act. Now, of course, the Family Values Republican House has had no interest in it whatsoever. Marty just said, yeah, I hear the howls of spare the rod and spoil the child of blowing in the wind. Hey. I do too. We even talked about that with the folks there standing in front of the Supreme Court, about how the rod is used for gentle guidance, not for hitting people with. Shepherds seldom beat their sheep. Instead, they take their rod and they guide them gently in the direction they wish them to go. Maybe that's a problem in the sheep herding industry. Maybe we need to beat the sheep more often. TheHittingStopsHere.com. And the lady I was talking to, whose name is Paula, told me about a book called Nurture Shock. Nurture Shock. And apparently, somewhere around page 108 of that book, these authors, Poe Bronson and Ashley Merriman, argue that young black males need to be beaten into school in schools so as to civilize them, whereas if one beats white males, it merely brings out their aggression. Yeah, that brings out a little bit of crazy. But she also pointed out to me that in the statistics of who does get beaten, it is disproportionately administered to persons of color, either African American youth or Latino Hispanic youth. Not nearly as much to good, upstanding, God-fearing white folks. In the course of the discussion that we had, I immediately recalled the words, the wise words of none other than Dr. James Dobson, who said that in order to have a Christian nation, we need to beat children until they cry real tears. Yeah. Really. How can we expect to survive? What does a country expect of children that it teaches to expect pain, agony, and sadism as a function of education? That might put people off the idea of public education, don't you reckon? Yeah, me too. But 19 states. Now, we like to think that we're fairly civilized. What would you do if your youngin' came home and said, "Mommy, I got beaten at school today because I stepped out of line"? even in our prison industrial complex. Beatings such as are administered in our school system would be cognizable at law. It would be. But children are expected simply to take it. Then there's the public education system generally. And I generally support public education. But stories like this make me wonder. This particular story coming out of the Commonwealth of Kentucky. Sorry, Corey. The mother of a Laurel County high school student has filed a complaint against a teacher who wrote, and this is a quote, "You can't be a Democrat and go to heaven," unquote, on her classroom whiteboard. The teacher, whose name is Kendra Baker, wrote the statement denigrating Democrats in her room at South Laurel High School, after the November 6th election. I guess we're just lucky she didn't write SecD now. Mary Gilbert is the mother of 17-year-old Chelsea Gilbert. Ms. Baker teaches psychology. Really? Ms. Gilbert said she filed the complaint against Ms. Baker with the State Education Professional Standards Board. Laurel County Superintendent Doug Bennett confirmed this past Monday that Ms. Baker's actions violated the school district's policy and that the issue had been addressed with her. Whatever that means. Now, that's what she wrote on the board. You can't be a Democrat and go to heaven. Now, why would she write that? Well, there is, as always, more to the story. The problem started the day after the election, in which a discussion took place in Baker's psychology class about the presidential vote. In Laurel County, Kentucky, Bishop Willard Romney won the plebiscite by a vote of 18,151 to 3,905. So during this classroom discussion about the election, Ms. Baker, the psychology teacher, decided to start pontificating about same-sex marriage and about how wrong it is. 17-year-old Chelsea Gilbert, bless her heart, told Mrs. Baker that she was being offensive. Because, among other things, Chelsea Gilbert knew things that perhaps Ms. Baker didn't. Namely, that in that class, that psychology class, in which marriage equity was being discussed after the election, Chelsea Gilbert knew that there were gay children, gay teenagers. And when she told Ms. Baker that she thought she was being rather offensive, Ms. Baker responded to her by saying, "Well, honey, someday you're going to have to take your parents to the emergency room and watch them die because of Obamacare." And that is when it became a little too much for young Miss Chelsea Gilbert, who arrived home that afternoon after school in tears. Chelsea's mama, called the principal at South Laurel High School. Chelsea's mama asked the principal to tell Ms. Baker to apologize to Chelsea and the other students. The principal did no such thing. And so a week later, Tuesday, November 13th, Chelsea walked into her psychology class where she found written on the board, "You can't be a Democrat and go to heaven." Now just let that rattle around in your noggin for a minute. There's not a whole lot of people in this country who don't believe in some sort of afterlife. Because most of the people in this country believe in that loving God who loves them so much that he has prepared a place where he is willing to fry their souls for all eternity and torment them for something they didn't even do. You know, original sin. And so when you get that combination of one of these days you're going to watch your mama and daddy die in the emergency room because of Obamacare. When you get that, in conjunction with walking into the classroom and seeing you can't be a Democrat and go to heaven, in essence telling young Miss Chelsea that her mama and daddy are going to fry forever in the eternal lake of fire prepared for the devil and his angels, gets a bit too much to bear, don't you reckon? But there it was. You can't be a Democrat and go to heaven. And bless her heart. Bless her heart, Chelsea wanted to know why it was there. And Miss Baker said, "I heard that line from a student, and that's one of my new favorite quotes." Now, what a sadistic little martinet this Baker woman is. And of course, she's probably through the doors of the church every time they open. Miss Chelsea is just trying to live her life. And when her mama finally got through all the way to the school board did look into her complaint. And they told her later, they told Chelsea's mama later that Miss Baker had apologized to Chelsea. And then said, "But Miss Baker said it was just a joke, and she thought Chelsea could take a joke." See, it's Chelsea's fault. It's not Miss Baker's fault for being a semi-sociopathic, sadistic tormentor of a child. Of course, saying, "I thought she could take a joke," also points out the fact that it was intentionally done, doesn't it? Chelsea has now been withdrawn from school, where Chelsea's mama will try to teach her at home for the remainder of her senior year in high school. A time that is supposed to be precious and exciting for young people. But instead, in South Laurel High School, Kentucky, was turned into a nightmarish cornpone-accented manifestation of the Inquisition. Chelsea's mama said, "She's going to miss a lot." And she will. She will. And hopefully she can get as far, far away as she possibly can. From South Laurel County, Kentucky. Maybe she can go somewhere in civilization. Jack in Shreveport writing in, he says, your story about corporal punishment in our public schools brought to mind another story I think you'll probably recall. I was able to come up with it in a search. I've included it here since it's a short article. Yeah, I remember this one. Georgia police handcuff girl over tantrum. 6-year-old charged with assault and damage to property after she allegedly knocked over a shelf that injured the teacher. That's from this past April 17th, 2012. Yeah, that's what a 6-year-old needs, a criminal record. Right. Kevin writing in from Colorado Springs. Despite having some remnant of faith in at least something spiritual, I have to agree with you on your definition of atheism as being the lack of belief in religion or deity. Despite my lack of faith, to those who remain solidly right-wing Christian, I've seen much more harm done in the name of religion than vice versa. The story you're telling right now about the teacher saying you can't be a Democrat and be a Christian, it's not be a Democrat and be a Christian, it's be a Democrat and go to heaven, is in fact what really turned me on the road that I walk now, which is to keep what faith I have to myself, unless my faith compels me to do some good work, like feeding the poor or something like that. I bet you'd never hear a liberal Democrat Christian saying that you can't be a Republican and go to heaven, but such is the risk we take in defining ourselves as liberal Christian or liberal atheist. Notice something that repeats itself in that. Liberal. To these poor brainwashed so-called Christians, we are the ones deceived, but if they were to actually read the words of Jesus, they would soon understand that they're the ones being judged mental and being judgmental and deceived. 'Tis much better to say nothing and be thought a fool than to speak and be known to be one, right? Indeedy. Signed, Kevin. Marty notes, if I'm demanding that a teacher apologize to my child, I'd also be demanding that I be on hand to listen to it. Yeah. Of course, my inclination would be to make the demand within the four corners of a court pleading document. With regard to Miss Baker, Fritz in Arkansas says, by God, it's a good thing that wasn't my daughter Miss Baker wrote that blackboard message to. I might have went full-on redneck and confronted that teacher personally. Shit like this goes on in the classrooms in Arkansas on a daily basis. I have no children, but I know too many people that could tell stories like this. By the way, I know several liberals and parents of LGBT children in areas of Arkansas that were forced to go the homeschool route. An irony, because most homeschool parents do so because God is taken out of schools and so forth. We know a little bit about that, too. Darlene, with some comments on the school, on the atheism issue that has been with us since Monday. She says, Bob, I think what's prompted this meme that atheism is a religion is this level of discomfort from Tom Hartman and others for the so-called new atheists, such as Richard Dawkins and others, who are very outspoken about their atheism and willing to question and challenge religion generally, no matter if it's Catholicism or Buddhism, and they're willing to challenge the so-called faith heads directly. I guess Hartman and others are more comfortable with the quiet atheist, the one who knows his or her place and does not speak up or even in the face of ridicule or out, even in the face of ridicule or worse. I think it's this bombastic approach or enthusiasm, as one of your other listeners noted, on the part of the so-called new atheists that seem to bother Tom Hartman and others. And I'm not sure why. Maybe it's a very subtle, veiled kind of discrimination that even Hartman, who just sometimes seems too much like a Mr. Peter Perfect for my tastes, doesn't even realize. P.S. Dawkins's The God Delusion is a great read. Yes, it is. Particularly his last section entitled The Mother of All Burkas, where he talks about how science can help us better hone our intuition and understanding of the world and universe so we can one day throw off that burqa. He leaves room for miracles and improbabilities, intuition, and the ability of humanity to push against its current limits of understanding. Pretty good for an atheist, I think. I've enjoyed Dawkins' writing. I enjoy Sam Harris's writing. And what I don't understand is why anyone would suggest that they have to be quiet. I mean, look, I know they're not listening, so I can say this. I have little grandchildren who still believe in Santa Claus. We also have teenage children who figured it out for themselves, as most children do. The teenagers are not going to ruin it for the babies. But in this atheists should be seen but not heard attitude that I'm seeing described, I have not experienced it for myself nor heard any programming. In this atheist should be seen and not heard approach, however, it seems that we must treat the believers with the same sort of kid gloves treatment that we reserve for five-year-olds. That theistic adults somehow should not be confronted with the possibility that maybe they've got an invisible friend just like a five-year-old does. Because when you come right down to it, that's what the deity is. Even if the deity has the power to smite you where you stand, or the power to make an everlasting lake of fire because he loves you so much, he'll barbecue you in it. His followers are not to be wised up. Yeah. Texas Betsy has written in. She says, had my class grandma come in this morning and teach the kids about protest activism and how the rights we read about in the Declaration and soon we'll read in the Constitution actually played out in her life. Want more details? Oh, I'd love more details, Betsy. Heck, I'd like to have been there. I feel like Barney Fife when Andy was explaining to Opie and the kids about the shot heard round the world. And Barney says, well, go on. Tell us about the gun that fired that shot. Yeah, I want to hear that. Marty noting, never wake up a sleepwalker. And that's what happens with people who do, though. Yeah. That famous line from Dune. The sleeper has awakened. Of course, the other side to it is that some people, if you tell them that they have an invisible friend, suddenly feel they feel like their invisible friend has told them that they need to take a very sharp object and remove your head from your shoulders. So there are practical reasons for watching one's speech, because religious people, 9 times out of 10, are violent people. But here's a shocker. This is just recent, in this last week. You know, there's always something out there. Every time he opens his mouth, brother, doctor, candidate, presidential, whatever, in the CEO, Marion Pat Robertson, is saying something loopy. But I don't know if the meds are kicking in or what. because he's actually said things that were not patently insane lately. One of those things was pointing out that, well, cannabis should probably be legalized. And he's got some, he's got a little bit of company on this particular, sort of on this particular one. You know about the lawsuit down in Texas by the parents of the child who did not want to wear the RFID tracking chip. And so the school district took steps to try to transfer the child to a school that wasn't going to be using the tracking chip instead of dropping everything just for one child, one recalcitrant child, and one. And of course, the reason they didn't want little Precious to wear the little damn chip that was because it was the mark. Yes, the mark of the beast. You know, the Antichrist. And lo and behold, you would never believe this if somebody just, on his Ask Pastor Hagee program, lo and behold, Pastor Hagee explained that no, the little RFID chip and the little access card that they were going to have to, it's not like they were going to implant it with a little gun in the side of her neck or, you know, put it in her helmet and let it crawl into her ear or anything. Kidding, it was terrible. It just, you know, it unlocks doors and it lets you take attendance without him. Bueller. It cuts down on some of the time waste. And so lo and behold, there's big old ruminant Pastor John Hagee saying, no, this is not the mark of the beast, honey. And so along comes Pat Robertson. You remember when we talked about Senator Marco Rubio? I'm not a scientist, man. You remember that, right? Yeah. Well, lo and behold, of all people, Pat Robertson said, look, I know that people will probably try to lynch me. Well, thanks for the image there, Pat. Yeah, you're real. No, they won't. You're a little too pale for that. Look, I know that people would probably try to lynch me when I say this, but Bishop Usher, this is the guy who created the young earth because he counted all the generations of Adam. Look, I know people will probably try to lynch me when I say this, but Bishop Usher wasn't inspired by the Lord when he said that it all took 6,000 years. It just didn't. You go back in time, you got... Dr. John, are you still there? Are you seated? I mean, strap in, because you're going to just fall right out of the chair. This is Pat Robertson talking here. I wish I could play the clip so you'd know that I wasn't just funning you on Friday. Bishop Usher wasn't inspired by the Lord when he said it all took 6,000 years. It just didn't. You go back in time, you got radiocarbon dating, you got all these things, and you got the carcasses of dinosaurs frozen in time out in the Dakotas. Pat Robertson has denied Kenneth Ham's young earth theory and Glenn Beck's and Marco Rubio's and Brian Fisher's young earth theory of the, oh my heavens. Whatever shall we do about Grandpa Pat? Next thing you know, he'll be saying there's no hell. You got radiocarbon dating, you got all these things, and you got carcasses of dinosaurs. Well, they're not really carcasses anymore. I mean, you know, they're fossils. They've been transformed into stone. But no, we get your meaning. We get your meaning, Pat, and this time you're actually correct. Amazing, isn't it? I know. Kind of made my head, my eyes roll back in my head, too. Makes you think that maybe the end really is near. But that's okay. Brian Fisher and his crowd are picking up the slack. The Young Earth slack. The Obama's the Antichrist slack. And there's lots of slack. And if nothing else, it's funny slack. If it wasn't so damn dangerous. This case in particular, I mentioned Brian Fisher of the American Family Association of Tupelo, Mississippi. Well, he believes that Brian Fisher is a young earther. He's one of these goobers that thinks that the earth is actually just slightly younger than the written recipe for bread, which is apparently the written recipe for bread on Norblap 9, and it just fell here somewhere, right? Well, since we're talking about things under the earth, it turns out that, you know, that climate change we were talking about a minute or so ago, the one that may wind up killing millions of people over the next 100 years or so. Yeah, when you acknowledge that climate change is real, guess what happens? God gets insulted.
Mm-hmm.
Really. Brian Fisher had a goober named Calvin Beisner from the so-called Cornwall Alliance. Not going to say a damn thing about the Cornwall Alliance. You can't make me. You shut up too, Agnes. You're trying to get me in trouble. Yeah, you're number one in my book too, baby. She's all the time just waving at me and telling me I'm number one. I'm going to have to get her one of them big foam fingers or something. But it's a different finger she tells me I'm number one with. But anyway, Calvin Beisner was on the American Family Association report on the... you can get that on the devil. You can listen to the American Family Association report on the Homo Devil Box. Whoever that woman is with that sign, we're sending her a toaster. Who cares if Alan Turing broke the Enigma code? It's a Homo Devil Box. But anyway, our friends over at Right Wing Watch, and how I wish I could play you the audio, our friends over at Right Wing Watch like to listen to Brian Fisher on the Homo Devil Box. Poor Agnes is coming apart, too. Oh, honey, would you look on the Homo Devil Box and see what's playing at the movies? No, but... over there on the Homo Devil Box, Brian Fisher and Calvin Beisner of the Cornwall Alliance. If you knew how hard it is to read the word Cornwall and actually say Cornwall, declared that believing in climate change, and see, this goes back all the way to the beginning of the program with that little discussion about believing versus knowing, about not a cow being not the same thing as a different kind of cow. Believing in climate change is an insult to God. Kid you not. Of course, you and I, we don't believe in climate change. Although I don't know, within this strange little, what is it, an epistemology of Hartman's that was brought up in the original email from Ron and Raleigh, are we climate change religionists? No, but we don't believe in climate change. We have read and understood the science to the best of our abilities, and we acknowledge what the science says. That we, the people of planet Earth, have just about effed the planet to death. Or not the planet to death, effed ourselves to death, effed ourselves right out of the planet. We have, in short, where we eat. But, no, the only way that Brian Fisher, who broadcasts on the Homo Devil Box, the only way that Brian Fisher can comprehend anything is to believe it or not believe it. And so he and Calvin Beisner of the Cornwall Alliance, stop it, Bob, have declared that believing in climate change is an insult to God. And global warming is, of course, a myth. And here's the best part. Here's the best part from these followers of the Prince of Peace. The failure to use coal, oil, and natural gas is an insulting rejection of the gifts of coal, oil, and gas that God has given to us. When's the last time you got a bill for a gift? I mean, Christmas is coming. Maybe there'll be an office Christmas party. People will draw names, whatever. You'll get a new deck of cards or maybe a shoeshine kit or something like that. But the gift giver will not also hand you a bill for the cost of the shoeshine kit. That's why it's a gift. So apparently, if we sort of run down the theology of Brian Fisher and Calvin Beisner of the Cornwall Alliance, I guess coal, oil, and gas are gifts that God gave to the coal, oil, and gas industry, and we get to pay for the privilege of enjoying them. That's the best I can get to. God help me if I'm ever anywhere near Brian Fisher of the American Family Association of Tupelo, Mississippi. I just can't wait to ask him about that there gift of coal. And did his God mean to also gift us hillbillies with cancer and heart disease and endocrine disorders and birth defects and black lung and yeah, all that? Because if coal is a gift from God, what's he going to tell me? That the devil snuck in after? I mean, this is the ultimate Christmas present. The gift of coal is way the hell under the trees. That's for damn sure. And, I mean, what's he going to tell me? That Satan snuck in? Satan. And added in the selenium and added in the all the toxins and the arsenic and the mercury? Yeah, that's all satanic. Or maybe we should just sit around and wait to get healed. Cornwall Alliance. Jim, Cornwall Alliance. Fritz says, remembering back to my missionary Baptist days, I can recall more than one preacher railing against Hello Vision. TV. But I'm sure since that time they've come up with something to blast the interweb tubes with. After all, I can imagine those folks saying, them young folk ain't glued to their TVs or on basic cable, but plugged in with their laptops and smartphones to the tubes, because how can one explain that one getting back in the White House? Fritz, by the way, has created the perfect hillbilly compound noun. That's the Homer Double Box. That's H-O-M-E-R. You writing this down, Agnes? H-O-M-E-R-D-E-B-E-L-B-O-X. The Homer Double Box. I think I like that word better than Red Heights Kabot. Bless you. Betsy noting, I've heard some Orthodox Jews say that climate change is real, but that the solution is to trust that God will take care of us, or that the Messiah will come. After all, God provided us with the sun. Really, says Betsy. Anything but changing how we as humans respond, and doing so scientifically. And that's probably offensive to God, too. Bless your heart. Bless your heart, horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner. I wish I could play it, but my rig here's all screwed up. He has sent along, horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner has, the cornhole song. Jack in Shreveport, homo devil box. This is the subject line. Somebody really got to be a dumbass to come up with something that the squidbillies would say. Yeah, it does kind of have a squidbilly flavor to it, doesn't it?
Yeah, I want to watch my homo devil box.
Yeah, I'm really simple. I only realized a couple of weeks ago that the same person who does the voice for Granny Squidbilly is the voice for Mr. Master Shake on... Oh, God. Jim asking, whatever will you do without Pat Robertson? I have no idea, but I'm willing to try. So, in follow-up the teaser of the story earlier, Texas Betsy says, so I am the only fifth grade teacher who actually teaches social studies since it is not tested until eighth grade. But anyway, this grandma is on the PTA, the Campus Advisory Committee, and is just a general activist. She's been in the U.S. 20 years, and neither she nor her daughter are citizens, but the grandchildren are. Anyway, they live in the trailer park next to the school. And when the school was being built, the parents who signed up went to the organizational meetings and were told that their kids would be able to walk to school, that they would build a path from the school to the trailer park, cutting through the fence. Never built. Company that owns the trailer park refuses, says it's a safety issue. Parents organized and tried to approach the school administration, then joined every school committee they were allowed to. They petitioned the trailer park. 3 times the families cut their own hole in the fence, and the trailer park has closed it up. They want the kids to walk all the way to the 4-lane highway over 300 yards, then through the main entrance and to their houses. No sidewalks in the trailer park. Parents are outraged and have organized a campaign to bother the home office of the trailer park company at least 5 times a day. The school district says the children are within the 2-mile limit and can walk. The kids are walking 1 hour instead of 15 minutes. One great-grandma crawls under the fence every day to pick up 4 children and then crawls back with the children in an area with snakes and other critters. The school said no comment until they were forced to take the side of the parents. Now the parents are picketing at the school district office and looking into running against some sitting board members at the municipal elections in the spring. There's a whole TV news segment about this committee of parents, but I'm afraid it's only on Univision. Anyway, Grandma is our role model for how to be a good citizen and use our rights. Oh, that just makes me feel good. Grandmas are so special that way. I know that grandma story has probably got Kate smiling from ear to ear out in Montana. Kate is a strong believer in the power of the grandma. What a beautiful thing to do for those children, to let them see. Let them see people speaking truth to power. Yep. Jim, thanks, Bob. Whoops, thought you said something else. Cornhole, no, devil box is a-churning, right? Right, Jim. Kevin writing about the Netroots Nation idea that our buddy Tom had put forward. He says, the idea of doing a Netroots conference horn-in next summer sounds good to me. If at all possible, I'll try to attend. Perhaps if we as the Horn family collectively start planning that now, we can work on ways to get you and yours as well as all others out to San Jose. It'd be a challenge, but if we do this as a family, like it should be anyway, we can almost assuredly pull it off. As one who does not get out as often as I'd like, I volunteer to participate and possibly lead the planning committee on this. I'm serious in saying that this can be done as the Horn family. The Horn is a different kind of talk show, and perhaps it's now time to show that difference in another way as well. Signed by Kevin in Colorado Springs. Homer Devil Box. I got a feeling that one's got staying power. Jesus. So it's about 12 minutes past the hour. Again, let me explain. I can't play any music. We're just going to have dead air. And I'm going to take a little break, and we will come back. Email's all we got for tonight. We're doing the best we can. Just like Ronald Reagan. When he began to slip slide, you know, when his theme song became Slip Sliding Away, I remember that footage of him sitting at the old RFK Stadium for a football game, and the reporters were all around him, and, you know, oh, Mr. President, what are you going to do about the Contras? Mr. President, what about the Arms for Hostages deal? And lo and behold, because I guess there was a shotgun mic involved, you could hear Nancy leaning over, whispering in the Gipper's ear, tell them we're doing the best that we can. And all of a sudden he perked right up and he looked at the camera and said, well, yeah, we're doing the best that we can. So we'll take a little break and come back. We're doing the best that we can. This is Conversation Radio, not being very conversational. It's a Friday night filibuster as we get ready to blow out of D.C. on the morrow. This is The Horn, listener-supported. Thanks for the two kind contributions. Thanks for the $50 that have come in this evening toward getting us started on what could be a kind of scary December with me being on the road next week. Thanks very kindly for that. The PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com if anybody else wants to chip in. Sure would be nice. Because, like I said, it's listener-supported. It's The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Sorry about the length of the break. Lo and behold, I muted the mic and the phone rang here. It was one of our egg team members, and we were doing a little, had to do a little bit of logistic work. Ah, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. It's Friday on the Front Porch. It's been a weird little program. No playback, nothing but talk. No phones, nothing but me talking. The occasional, lots of great emails. So, I don't know, this is very old school. Kate wrote in a few minutes ago. She said, grandmas indeed. Those who think they are in power have no idea who they're up against. We who are willing to crawl under the fence through the snakes are a force to be reckoned with. Them boys got no idea. We're on the verge of taking over the world, and it ain't going to be pretty. Just saying.
You go, Kate. Love you, hon.
Said Agnes. Jim saying, please advise folks to read Alan Turing's biography, a very good read. And Alan Turing is he's a hero of the modern world. Cracked the Enigma code, basically invented the computer, and for his pains was tormented to death by the British government because of how he loved. Jack in Shreveport just sent a note along. He said, I just saw the following tweet from Justice for Justice, FORGOVDS, Justice for Governor Don Siegelman, the Free Don Siegelman campaign. The tweet said, we are both tremendously humbled and eternally grateful for your efforts. Thank you for helping the petition reach over 40,000 signatures. So apparently the Free Don Siegelman petition has over 40,000 signatures if you want to go out and find it and add your own. It is a travesty of justice that Don Siegelman is behind bars. Behind bars for daring to be a liberal in Alabama, Stan. It's that simple. Betsy, following up, she said, there is a Univision segment on this fight because the parents are called the local TV station. Also, entirely outside the realm of politics, my entire class calls this woman Abuelita, which is little grandma in Spanish. Heroes are not necessarily 9 feet tall. Nor male. I would be what Kate said, and it ain't going to be pretty. Because they won't quit until their children are safe, nor should they. A brief reminder, we are, of course, up here working on the AIC campaign, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Campaign. There is still work to be done, and it does not harm to continue reaching out to your member of Congress. John, who had written in earlier about his efforts to reach out to his Republican member of Congress, sent a note in last night. I'm trying to find it now. I'll be right there presently, if not pleasantly. There it is. Subject line, contact made with staffer at Representative Mike Kaufman's Washington office. He said, I finally squeezed out the time on a working day to get a call into my congressman's office this afternoon. I tried in my decidedly less than articulate phone style. Don't sell yourself short, John. earnestness, sincerity, make up for all the artifice in the world. To emphasize the yet to be born and harm mountaintop removal does to the unborn, I think I hit that one three times at least, and the tens to hundreds of millions of dollars in public health care support required by the residents of Appalachia to deal with the poisoning they're getting thanks to mountaintop removal operations. Coffin's staffer was cordial, heard me out, checked the bill status to see who was currently co-sponsoring H.R. 5959. I assume that once he saw all those progressive-ish Dems, my call became an irrelevance at best. Still, he said he'd pass the message on to the congressman. John says, who knows? Occasionally weird things actually come to pass. Nothing ventured and all that. I'm thinking I'll follow up next week with a call to Kaufman's district office and a thank you for considering my request email. Good idea. John says, in any event, hope you and the family have had a productive and above all enjoyable stay on the Hill. It has been productive. And it has not been unpleasant. This is a fascinating town, and all one need do is go out on the sidewalk and experience some of that fascination. Agnes and I were outside this morning walking around with a cup of coffee. And lo and behold, who did we run into but Ohio's Senator Sherrod Brown? Stopped him, said good morning. He's a very nice guy. He said good morning, too. And made sure he knew about the AIC Act. It'll soon be time to start work in the Senate. And we will. And he will be one of those names that we work. For anybody else who's curious, I just got an email from Jim saying, dead air every time you break. Yes, that's true. That's because I am unable to play any music because of severe limitations on our technical abilities at this point in time. No music, no phone calls, no Skype, no nothing, just talk and email. So that explains that. Again, a little reminder, we will have one show next week, and then I'm on the road to Wisconsin to go up and talk to folks about the coming plans to blow the Pinoki Hills into a state of toxic flatness and hope that we can inspire people to resist it and not let it happen. So, we'll have a show on Monday, and yay, we'll actually be able to take phone calls. Do you hear that sound that sounds like a bear in the background here? I don't know if you can or not. I don't know if the mic's picking it up, but Ferg has fallen asleep. A bear that has gone into hibernation. It's about 22 minutes before the hour. A couple of things just to sort of wrap up. Again, I miss not being able to play audio, something fierce, because somehow, well, just having to describe what someone has said is not the same as letting you hear the full frontal crazy of it. No audio associated with this particular story, however. Just further indication of exactly how perverted our system of justice has become. A case is going to come before the Supreme Court in the next term against Monsanto. Why the rats on the Supreme Court, my next-door neighbors here, decided to hear it unless it was to further codify the untouchable status of Monsanto is beyond me. Monsanto, over the last 13 years or so, has developed a little practice, and in any other, in almost any other realm of the law, one would suspect that this would be treated as almost harassment. It's a sort of a lottery that they run. Every year, for the past 13 years or so, Monsanto picks out a few hapless farmers and sues the hell out of them for violating their patent on seed corn. They're genetically modified, couldn't be eaten by a human if their lives depended on it, Roundup Ready seed corn and soybeans. The independent farmers then have to pay money damages to Monsanto. It's a racket, you know. Let's say you've got a newsstand in the neighborhood. Well, one night your newsstand burns up, and the next day this guy in a dark suit walks into the next door ice cream shop and says, "Sure is a pity what happened to your neighbor, the newsstand day. You know, we could keep that from happening." And the extortion racket begins. Well, this is Monsanto's extortion racket. They sue about 11 people a year. The farmers have done absolutely nothing whatsoever to obtain the patented seeds. The wind does that. Another farmer will be planting the Monsanto Franken seeds. The wind will blow the pollen across, and boom, there you go. They budget about $10 million a year, Monsanto does. They budget about 75 members of their staff, Monsanto does, to torment these farmers into submission. This past Monday, or 2 Mondays back, the United States Department of Agriculture released a final report that absolutely absolved, gave a pass to the Franken seed industry. For any contamination of non-Franken seed crops they might perpetrate. What did the federal U.S. Department of Agriculture say to organic farmers who don't want their Franken genes inside their plant products? Y'all just need to buy some insurance. Really? You can buy insurance against wind-blown pollen? The damnedest thing I've ever seen. I guess you can insure anything. On the other hand, however, Monsanto can keep suing year in and year out in pursuit of its extortion racket. The suits, by the way, are for theft of intellectual property. Maybe that'll give you a sense for just exactly how Orwellian this whole process is. Recently, the Justice Department bailed out on an antitrust investigation of Monsanto as well. They must have given a shitload of money to the presidential campaign. Then there's the Farm Bill. The Farm Bill is presently stalled in Congress, in this case kind of mercifully, because one of the things that the Farm Bill has in it is the complete deregulation of genetically modified crops. basically letting Monsanto take the bit in its teeth. So don't expect a lot out of this case before the Supreme Court. A farmer in Indiana actually appealed all the way to the Supreme Court of the United States when he was ordered to pay $80,000 to Monsanto for infringement on their intellectual property patent because the wind blew a seed into his field. The lawyers who have filed these suits over these years should be disbarred, pure and simple, because those lawsuits are specious and harassment. Yeah, the Betsy pointing out Peru kicked Monsanto out and banned him. So did France. But not us. Give it to the Americans. They'll eat anything. Right? Yeah. Oh, good. You can't hear her snoring. That's a good thing. Thank you. Well, it certainly has been a novel Friday on the front porch. This is not a way I would want to go about doing the program forevermore. I miss you guys' input. I miss the ability to play audio. Dear God. I miss the ability to... Oh, what do you do with this? Did you know that the Becker Head has art hanging in a community college art museum? Yeah. Well, maybe it's not his art. But the Becker Head is all excited about a painting of Barack Obama with his arms outspread, Christ-like on the cross, wearing a crown of thorns. Yeah. No, he really has. He has created a piece of so-called art. They're up for sale. Maybe they've been taken down by now on eBay. One of the pieces is, of course, called Obama in Pee-Pee. The bidding had run up to $12,000. It was pulled from eBay because it violated the eBay ban on sales of bodily waste. Well, who knew that eBay wouldn't let you sell that? And of course, he's trying to get a rise out of the progressives, so he can say, "Well, that's okay. You put my Lord in a jar of pee-pee." Missing, of course, the entire point of Piss Christ. The point being that the people who claim to worship him most urinate all over his teachings. Yeah. But the paranoia is strong with this one, the Beckerhead. He has declared that we are in grave danger. Yeah. Did you know that within the next 5 years, a dictator is going to take power in America? Not a sweet tater. Not an Irish tater. A dictator. Probably impose Sharia law. Mark my words, in the next 5 years you will see this very thing, somebody seizing power and real democracy movement standing up, but who will stand up for them then? No one. You know, because we didn't elect the white horse. You ever ask yourself, do they really believe this crap, or do they know it's just shtick? Hard to say. Hard to say indeed. Well, I guess that's going to wrap things up pretty much. 10 minutes.